All right, this is James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio. We've got another great guest. We've got David Ian Cohen, or Ian Cohen. He's a licensed spiritual health coach. He lives in Boulder, Colorado with his wife, Irina. He's more from a professional musician, counselor, alternative health practitioner, and biofeedback trainer into an author and speaker of modern spirituality. Together, the Cohens created Blue Sun Energetics in order to share some of the things you have read here through the classes, webinars, and other publications, and to introduce cutting-edge futuristic technologies. Currently, they offer classes in spiritual communication, relationship, healing, and certification program in spiritual dowsing. David invites your questions and comments, and also invites you to sign up for the newsletter on the website to stay updated on events, products, and other writings, topics of timely esoteric interest. And for more information, you can contact him at info@bluesunenergetics.net, and that'll be up at the website. Or you can visit him at the bluesunenergetics.net website. So without further ado, we're going to welcome David on the show. David, are you with us?
You betcha, James. And thank you so much for this opportunity to share with you and with your listeners.
Oh, yeah, it's great to have you on the show. I know you came up here recently and had a nice experience, got to view some of the crazy activity in the sky and experience some of the energies here at the ranch.
Yeah, that's great. And we've been actually fans of your website for quite some time and have been setting the attention. One day we just got to get up there and spend some time. And so on our annual trek to Canada for a family reunion, on the way back, we just said, we're going to do it this time, and I'm so glad we did. It was a wonderful evening and very eye-opening. And I got to say, I appreciate your generosity in giving people that direct experience of what's out there and what's so tangible once it's pointed out, how to do that. And so it's really changed the way we look at the sky. And so thank you again for that opportunity.
Oh, you're welcome. I know you've got a new book out. It's called Navigating the Collapse of Time, A Peaceful Path Through the End of Illusions. And it does seem to be well underway, this process. And I mean, we can go so many directions, in this. But, just to start off, let's talk about maybe what's causing this collapse of time.
Well, when we look for causes, of course, we're so used to operating from a limited level of consciousness, frankly, on this planet. We've been looking outside ourselves for meaning and for answers for so long that it's kind of we've missed the obvious, which is right under our noses, in that the changes we see going on around outside us are really a reflection or a projection of the changes that are going on within. So to really get a solid grasp, I think, of the outer changes, we need to appreciate them as really just reflecting back to us in this mirror world. I like to call it the mirror world sometimes, of the changes that are going on within our minds individually and collectively, which I see as a natural evolutionary process, an inevitable evolutionary process. That we move to a level of being, some have called it a unity consciousness, whereby we begin to experience within ourselves this essential unity with creation, with nature, with each other, and then begin to operate on that basis. So we are really experiencing an inner change, and the outer is reflecting back to us the opportunities, before us, and also our individual experiences, kind of giving us feedback, you might say, as to where we are at in this process.
Yeah, I've had so many people ask me that, the big $60 question. They're saying, how much of our reality do we really create, and how much have we chosen to, incarnate to experience, in a bigger picture? Let's say there's other forces, like the forces of nature and her evolutionary process and these galactic forces and all these other forces at play here. And then you have the collective consciousness going in one direction as well. And it's the big $60 question. They always ask, well, how much how much control do I have over this reality or this situation?
Sure, and that's very understandable position. I guess the way we think, we tend to think it's either or. And I do think that as new truth is revealed, we begin to see a convergence of paradigms where both are true within their own context. You know, to step back a little bit, this entire universe is the result of our choice, of our will to experience something called separation. So we are really at the root, and that's the uncompromising non-dual perspective that I talk about in my book. Not just some of this is self-created, all of it is. And once we come from that foundation, then we can begin to work with the other levels, the influences, you know, the times, the extraterrestrials, whatever it is we want to focus, and appreciate the role that these may be playing in the bigger picture, but from a perspective of, again, seeing it all as self-created, not the small ego self-created, but the one self that we are, the true self, has created all of this. So if you think of the universe as a dream, I think that's a pretty useful analogy in that when you're in a dream, you know, everything does seem to be tangible, although a little bit crazy sometimes. And as long as you're in that dream entirely, you don't realize that it's all a fantasy. So you may, you know, you have to play the game while you're within it. It's only when you awaken, you appreciate that the whole thing was a dream and none of it actually ever happened. So it's kind of, I guess you could say what we're talking about is the end of duality and the move back towards this unity consciousness we're talking about. Duality being the sense that I'm separate from my experience, things happen to me, not because of me, and that I can be a victim of circumstances and all this. These are all beliefs within the dream that seem to be operating within the dream, and it's only when you step outside you experience knowing that this is all just something going on in a fantasy world, a state of mind that we have chosen.
The you know, I've seen it depends on like who's asking the question and what level their perceptions are coming from, or what level of awareness they're coming from. Because on this level, you know, on a physical level with our mental, emotional body or our personality self, we're in that duality, and we're in that you know, we can get jump on that triangle at any time. You know, the victor, the victim, persecutor, savior triangle that keeps spinning. You know, we can jump into that drama at any time on this level, and then we have there seems to be so many levels to us, and you know, it gets really complicated when you try to wrap your mind around it, especially if you're trying to try to do it, you know, in linear time. It just doesn't work that way, it seems.
It can be very complicated, and of course that's what the ego wants to do. It wants you to get lost in the details and give up on the search for simplicity and for truth. But it really does boil down to what is real and what is not real. And the difference being what is real is enduring, and what is not real comes and goes. So if anything can change, even our perceptions, even our ideas about what is and what's going on, if that can change, then essentially it's not real. And there's, you know, we're talking about, you're right, we do choose the position that we want to view experience from. And I guess that's the golden opportunity here, is we get to exercise that free will and decide, well, how is it that I want to see things? Do I want to see chaos and endless confusion and levels and layers, like you're saying? And that's what academia has been doing for hundreds of years, and they've come up with zilch, you know? Or do I want to see and seek peace? Do I want to see the end of confusion? And do I want to experience a world of peace? And I think once we make that inner commitment, it's almost a giving up in a sense. You throw up your hands and say, I can't make sense of all of this. Maybe there is no sense to it. And yet that giving up on what doesn't work is coming from a deep but dim memory that we do know what works, and that we have been in that state of knowing. We just fell asleep.
Yeah, the some of the practices we do here, like Yigong and things like that, they call them the practice of no mind, where you're doing these forms and they align with nature. It's like the airbender, stuff. And it's amazing when you get into that phase, everything else falls away, and then your spirit can drop in. You can have all these amazing experiences, but as long as you're in, the mind, and your mind is just running amok and reacting to all the things around us, you'll never get that peace or that connection. So it's kind of interesting in developing some kind of a daily practice of meditation or Qigong or something else. You can step aside and get back into that God mind, you might call it.
I couldn't agree any more, James. And as a matter of fact, in our classes and with our clients, we really emphasize finding some kind of practice on a daily basis that takes you to that zero point, that takes you to that place of inner peace. Without that, there will be no outer peace, frankly. And that's something that we can all do on a very grounded, practical basis, is we can just decide that, I'm not going to live this day until I touch ground, you might say, until I experience that zero point, that stillness within, and then bring a little bit of that with me back into the day. And the days that I forget, or for whatever reason, just don't get around to doing that, at the end of the day, I look back and go, "Well, that was a wasted day." I believed everything that was going on.
Yeah. I've seen that many times with people. They have so much, they have a huge investment into being right and to, continuing in their past course and making everybody else wrong, including the universe. And I've seen it over and over again, and they'll be carrying, they might be carrying the energy of the victim energy or the anger energy or some energy they haven't owned or dealt with. And then people are, because they're carrying that energy, people around them are reacting to it, are walking away from it going, "Oh," And then they'll shift into blaming everybody and making everybody wrong. It's interesting to watch that game and that drama going on, and I'm still learning how to navigate that. How do you play the game without attachment, or do you just like walk away from it, or do you there's so many different ways of playing that one out.
Well, I mean, you've really hit the nail on the head. Judgment is hard work. Living in judgment, constantly thinking it's up to us to determine what is right and what is wrong, what is good and what is evil, there's that duality again, right? It's very hard work. It's exhausting. And it keeps you from, even catching a glimmer of the possibility. It doesn't have to be that way. But I think what you've just described is also a pretty apt description of the polarity that's occurring on a planet basis now. You can see how people are choosing how they're going to perceive this time of change. Are they going to see it through the eyes of fear and endless analysis and something evil happening on the earth and the belief in sin and retribution and all of these ideas? Or are they going to see it as an opportunity to change our minds about who we are? You mentioned earlier about the endless questioning, and you can sort of tell what where a person's focused by the nature of their questions. Well, the opportunity we have before us now is to get to a point where there will be no questions. There will be an inner knowing and a remembering of our divine nature. And as we look into each other's eyes, that's what we'll see. We won't see the divisions of the past and the old prejudices and fears. That is on its way out. It simply cannot survive the vibration of the energy we're in.
Yeah, it sounds like eventually the radio stations will all be just be dead air, and there won't be everything will go back to telepathy, and there won't be any questions because everybody's going within and not looking outside of themselves.
Won't that be wonderful?
Yeah, I always tell people, please put me out of business. It's
I've been seeing lately some news about things happening in our local solar system,
Mm-hmm.
they actually provide the basis for that type of a silence. I'm talking about electromagnetic pulses and pole shifts and all this kind of stuff. I'm sure you've been tracking the news on Elenin and the reported brown dwarf, etc. And to me, this is so exciting because we've all heard, the different prophecies, the Hopi, the Cherokee, etc., that talk about the great purifier returning and that talk about, the world basically spinning in another direction and the sun going out in 3 days of darkness, all this stuff. Well, a lot of that to me, sounded kind of more like an allegory or symbolic. And then I heard about this approaching planetary body. I'm going, oh my gosh, here we could see in the physical realm at least, the mechanics, the possibility for some of these changes coming down.
It would fit all those parameters, and what's funny too is that whole comet Elenin-Nibiru thing. It's so convoluted. All the information coming out of that. It's obviously that NASA stands for never a straight answer, and they've given us all these different. They have the head of NASA warning everybody it's time to prepare and start storing up some food, find a safe location. He's warning all the employees of NASA that something's coming down and you better start getting ready for it. And then the message to the public is, oh, there's nothing to worry about and you don't have to do anything. And these are non-events and Nibiru doesn't exist. But then in 80, was it 83 or 86? I'm not sure. They found Nibiru and they issued a press release that it did exist and it was on its way here.
Yeah, I guess we're having our own information revolution, just like they had in Egypt, for example, with both sides of the story coming out equally available to all through the internet and through various means, where it's very difficult to keep parts of the truth sealed these days.
Yeah, it is. It's amazing how the double speak going on. And I've seen that's a good thing too, because the media, the mainstream media has been very controlled, people, a good example is just recently in Carmichael, California. There was a flotilla of ships that flew over Carmichael, California. Well, I didn't see it anywhere. Great video of this, hundreds of ships flying over, flew over towards San Francisco. God knows how many people have seen this, saw this flotilla going by. And some people, oh, those are just balloons, but they were reversing, they were going back and forth and not moving like a balloon at all. It was very obvious, but it looked like the footage from Guadalajara, where they had hundreds of ships, maybe even thousands, flying over there. And then that hit the front page of all the newspapers down in Mexico. Yet, we don't see anything about these events happening here. And on top of that, you never hear about a cure for any major disease that we're dealing with. You never hear about free energy technologies coming forward, or all those things are just taboo.
Well, the old paradigm of the need to control, in a way, I see it as kind of a natural incubation period for the human species. We haven't been at a level of consciousness where we can truly be self-regulating and know what's best for ourselves. So we were appointed, you might say, overseers, much like a farmer would oversee, chicks that are underdeveloped. And I think ETs probably look at us, like a farmer would look at eggs under an incubation light. They're going, are they ready yet? Are they pop yet? No, they're still in the larva stage, but it looks like they're getting ready. And it's only when we're ready to, again, move up to a higher spin, a higher frequency, that the farmer or the controllers or whatever will either back off, the job is done, or they'll step in with a new level of cooperation and mutual respect. So, the time of transition in these phase shifts is always a little chaotic. Chaos theory, which came out, what, in the late 70s or whatever, talked about these transitions in time where before a major phase transition or a major shift in dimension for that matter, there's always a breakdown of the previous limitations. And that's what we're seeing. You know, we're seeing anything, any system, any institution, any structure in the world that is based on a premise of this old paradigm of control and fear, basically fear-based, is coming to the surface to be observed, to be clearly seen for where it's coming from, and then releasing, making room for something new. But to get back a little bit of what you were saying earlier, you mentioned, you know, how do you, or alluded to, you know, how do you deal with all of these different questions and folks, you know, groping for meaning? And, you know, it really comes back, for me anyway, to the practice of forgiveness. Forgiveness, in the world's sense, looks at a crime or a fault and then out of moral superiority forgives it, but in that example doesn't really forget it. You know, it becomes kind of another control paradigm. But true forgiveness is again in recognizing that this is all a dream and that the dreamer is one and that nothing truly ever happens here of any eternal consequence, you might say. And that all behavior, whether we judge it good or bad, and there's always, you know, two sides to that coin, is coming from love, in that what we call good behavior is a clear expression of love. We have no trouble interpreting that. But the bad behavior, even the behavior of the controllers and the decimators of human populations in the past, etc., the real criminals of history, is at root a call for love. It's simply a desperation, a declaration that something's wrong within me, and I'm doing the best I can to express that. But beneath that behavior is a call to be recognized and to be, again, embraced back into this oneness. So for me, as a personal practice and also as a teaching, this type of forgiveness, I think, is an indispensable tool in allowing us to come to peace and in the process heal our relationships, not only our personal relationships, but our relationships with government, with countries, with nations. Even with our experiences of the past, we can shift all of those relationships by simply choosing to see them in a different light.
The one statement I love, there's an old saying, it says, being a Christ doesn't mean being a doormat. And I've always loved that saying where people believe that forgiveness ultimately means giving up, you know, your own personal space or your own acquiescing to, you know, I didn't want to call it evil, but, you know, acquiescing to others and, you know, those who are aggressive and can force their will upon others and things like that. But maybe we can go further in that maybe we need to redefine forgiveness and our other ways of dealing with these energies.
Indeed, indeed. And I think that was really the original intent of the teacher who became idolized as this being called Christ, to demonstrate through his life that forgiveness is first of all, without qualification. You know, there's no compromise. If you forgive one thing, you forgive it all. And again, it's this ability to see through the transparency of the illusion of separation, that we really are one being here, trying to work things out from a state of the belief in separation.
Now, there's another one, and I'm kind of like pushing the envelope here a little bit. One of the master teachers I studied with, I love what he said. And, you know, he told me that, and one of my problems was, you know, I trusted everybody. I always trusted everybody. And I had some really valuable lessons, you know, in that arena where I had to kind of pull my energies back and use a little more discernment. But, you know, there's two things he told me. He said, trust is earned. And I thought about that, and that was something I needed to reevaluate. And the other one is that, you know, he said, although you're focusing on love and joy and bliss and service, you know, you have to realize that may not be another's truth. You know, those two things, you know, helped me kind of navigate through the Earth program here.
Yes, everyone is convinced of their own truth, and basically they run on belief systems and thought systems that are all self-contained. So we're all true believers in whatever it is we want to believe, and again, getting back to this shift, we're all going to have the experience that that we want to have. You know, there are those who are committed to the path of destruction and apocalypse, and they'll get their wish. And there's those who are committed to creating a world of peace and harmony and freedom, and they will get what they wish. And behind this, all things are allowed, sort of free will contract that we're under, is complete and absolute trust. Creator trusts us no matter what choices or decisions we make, because Creator sits outside of the dream of separation and knows that all of this is only occurring in the theater of the mind. And we all carry the memory of that knowing. We all carry that spark of recognition of who we truly are outside the dream. I guess the trouble comes when we try to fit those concepts and those ideas back into the dream, which many of our world religions have tried to do. They've tried to take these cosmic ideas and fit them into the world, which is taking a round peg and trying to force it into a square hole, and never the twain shall meet. So, again, I called the world earlier a mirror world, and the thing about a mirror is it's a very convincing image until you figure out that everything in it is backwards. So in the world, we try to fit the truth into our experience of separation here, and it just doesn't work. It just creates more conflict, as history has shown. So what we do is we reverse that. We take this world and this life we're living, and we give it back to the light. We surrender it. And again, you do this on a personal basis through forgiveness. You surrender that judgment of that person. You surrender the thoughts and feelings you may have about that person or that group, and you simply give it to the light. And this turns the whole process around, where the world you experience now begins to reflect back to you this choice to see only the truth, the pure purity and the beauty. And I think that's what it is that we're choosing to do now collectively, is we've had it with the world of pain and suffering and separation and dominance and control and victimhood and all that. We've had it. You know, we're throwing up our hands and saying, enough of that. It's going to destroy us. What's the next choice? And the next choice, of course, is to just give this world back to the light and let the light heal it through each and every one of us.
Now, it does seem that there is a progression. You know, we call them the yugas. There's all these different, you know, science is now coming into this information that we are like cycling around this energy where we're coming into alignment with galactic plane.
Yes.
And so there are forces that are going to weigh very, I don't want to say heavy, but intense would be a better word.
Yes.
You know, moving this unity consciousness forward and moving us in that direction where we are going to, you know, in the war and the separation game and all these other programs.
Right.
So it does seem to be, even despite our will on this level, you know, our I always say our ego will, there's another will that's playing out that seems to be much bigger than our program.
Indeed, indeed. And the paradox is, you know, that we're experiencing time, and this particular experience of time is taking us beyond the experience of time. So it's almost like the divine is using time to undo time. Uh-huh. And who knows? There may be a new experience of time on the horizon. You know, the Mayan calendar is not about the end of the world, as you know. It's about the end of a cycle of time. Uh-huh. The cycle of time described by the calendar, however, is pretty well takes in all of what we consider time, going back 16.5 billion years to the Big Bang. So that record is what fascinates me and always has about the calendar is that it implies that there's a purpose to this experience we call time, that it's not an endlessly, randomly unfolding kind of, infinite process, infinitely random process, but that it actually, there's a plan, and the plan has been unfolding exactly as the calendar has described. So, and the point or the purpose of time, according to that model, is that we will know ourselves as co-creators, as conscious co-creators of realities. Even the experience of time we will know is something that we desired and dreamt up. And what we do with that knowledge, whether we decide to create another experience of time, maybe one that's a bit more flexible, one that's a bit more focused in the now, and that's my suspicion, is that we're going to move into, again, what the Mayans call the time of no time, a period of time marked by a vastly greater experience of the richness of this moment as the only true time, with past and future shrinking down to just practical needs, you know, like I remember how to drive a car, or I remember how to put my pants on in the morning, and that's about all we really need time for, or meeting someone at a spaceport for a flight.
Yeah,
you know, time is just going to sort of dissolve into a utilitarian in the service of spirit rather than the other way around, and that's my hope and my dream. And that this is not going to be, this is actually going to occur in a split second. You know, the opportunity, the window to shift to this new experience of time will actually occur as a global doorway or opportunity. And again, what we do with that is up to each of us individually. There will be some who, out of fear, will, you know, just step back into the old experience of linear time and of themselves as victims of time. And they will be given an opportunity to live out that experience once again, I feel. But that's, again, evidence of the love and the trust that Creator has given us to choose whatever it is we want and to live it out fully.
Mm-hmm. It is interesting. I was talking to somebody that was very fixed in time one time. That's kind of funny. But it was kind of interesting. We were having this conversation. And he just says, well, you know, you have to... You have to accept time, that's a reality. And I said, why is that a reality? And I told him, I said, well, if you're on a bigger planet with a slower rotation, one day would be maybe 3 or 4 days.
Right.
And what if the Earth slowed down and spun slower? Then your days would be longer. Or if it sped up, your days would be. And I said, these are just, you know, rotations around a sun, you know, which are all relative. And so... And yeah. We've agreed that the Earth, because it, you know, has a 24-hour rotation or whatever, is going to be, you know, that's going to be time or whatever. And everybody's agreed to it. But it's yeah. really a man-made construct here on Earth. And it doesn't, you know, relate to, you know, other planets, other things of that nature. It doesn't relate at all to you know, bigger planets, slow rotations, or space, or anything else. And then at the same time, it's the world of spirit. You know, there is no time. You have this linear time. You can go back and forth anywhere on that timeline and check things out and participate. So,
yeah.
So it's interesting how people are so fixed on time and the way society has people locked into time. You know, And, you know, they've got to run and they got to turn their TVs set because they got to get the 6 o'clock news, you know, and find out who we're terrorizing, you know, or who's terrorizing back. And you know, you should be very afraid, you know, red alert, orange alert, all that stuff.
Yeah.
But that's all to lock people into this linear time construct and also to lock them into the ego, which is very fearful and very... You know, worried about, you know, survival. And what I see, it's all based on the first three chakras, basically survival, sex, and power.
Yeah.
And to keep people locked into those chakras, then they can control them very easily.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head by identifying the ego of the source of that particular mindset. And again, the temptation is to look at the ego as bad. Again, and we're just moving back into judgment, right? As a matter of fact, only the ego judges the ego. Spirit looks at ego and laughs.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I'm laughing. It's kind of funny.
At the audacity and the ridiculousness of the notion itself. But, you know, another way of, I think, of describing this opportunity is that we are really seeing the end of the need for an ego. Uh-huh. Just as a chick being born no longer needs a shell. You know, we no longer need the ego. If it ever had a purpose in evolution, which would have been survival, you know, in a hostile environment, we've pretty well got that one licked. Uh-huh. So, you know, and it's keeping us now in locked into these patterns of limited perception. But you know, as you were speaking, I got this image, you know, of a flock of baby sheep, you know, and they need that fence around them to give them security because they're not quite sure what it means to be a grown-up sheep. And so if you took that fence away too soon, they would go into fear and experience chaos. So it's like, you know, spirit says, okay, you know, the ego's a joke. It doesn't really exist. But in a sense, in the experience that folks are having in time, it's a functional illusion. And now that functional illusion is limiting us from growing and from expanding beyond that little self-imposed corral. And it's just time to take down the fences. It's time to take down the wall. As a matter of fact, if we don't, it's going to prevent us from growing, and that's not the divine plan. So we could say we're experiencing the end of the ego and the emergence into something that we don't have a historical precedence for. We don't have concepts necessarily or ideas of what it is we're becoming. And so there is an element of letting go of one thing and surrendering to another, which we're not quite sure what that is yet.
It seems like, you know, the fences were necessary and the borders were necessary and things like that at one point in time.
Yeah.
You know, to kind of, you know, keep people from just running amok, you know, over others and things of that nature. You know, I've always thought about, you know, what it would be like, you know, without all the fences, everybody cooperating, you know, working in the highest and best good of humanity and the earth, and didn't have borders, you know, or all these other things. And, you know, it's amazing if you really thought about, you know, the world I envision is a world where you have, you know, fuelless energy technologies and teleportation technologies you know, things that where you could transport food globally anywhere, anytime, in a moment.
Yeah.
And everybody living in harmony with the planet and each other. And it would be amazing, the abundance. I mean, you'd always have access to, you know, fresh fruit and fresh food no, that would never be a problem. But and you know, you'd always have the fuel and the manpower to get it wherever it needed to go, you know, pretty effortlessly. But
yeah, the good news is, James, that all thoughts, including those thoughts, produce form on some level.
Mm-hmm.
That's our creative potential. So what you've imagined already exists, and we're simply moving towards it in the experience of time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very encouraged by that vision, and I share that with you. And I think the more of us that catch it, the more we will dissolve the experience of time between now and then. And I think it's all, I mean, as time collapses and as time compresses, which it's doing now, it's almost like we're in that narrow funnel in the birthing process. And so all of our experiences are really being pressed down upon us as we begin to, you know, get ready to emerge as this new planetary being. And so the pressure is on, but it's a necessary pressure. Even the pressure of time itself, we're all feeling now. And this is totally consistent, again, with the Mayan calendar model. But you can imagine it. It's only because on a certain level of your multidimensional self, you know this to be true, and it already exists.
Exactly. I know I've lived those lives before and have full memory of it. You know, I was talking to a person the other day, and he was talking about, you know, the water technology for fuel. And I said, you know, that's amazing. We really need to start and doing, you know, things like that.
Yes.
But I've also held devices in my hand, you know, that have 9 coils that are about the size of a pie plate, you know, that put out 25,000 watts on each coil. And they're also counter gravity. So, we have this kind of technology. And I told people, I said, you know, you're looking at fuelless technology, and I'm looking at anti-gravity technology, where you could, you know, get up and have breakfast in Australia if you wanted to, you know,
yeah.
And be there in moments. And on the next level up, you wouldn't even need a vehicle because you'd be bilocating,
right,
to wherever you want to go. And what do you do with a border, you know, when everybody's bilocating? What, you know, what do you put a anti-bilocation fence up or something, you know? It's like
or a bilocation passport.
Yeah, exactly. You know, what do you do when you're control, when everybody's just zipping around and appearing you know, wherever they need to appear. So it's going to get really interesting in the days to come.
Definitely. I'm so glad to be here. And I do think it's a privilege to be in the process. And I think that's probably one reason why there's so many of us here now, 7 billion embodied souls, is that beings are lined up to actually participate with this planetary shift from the inside. You know, it's kind of like the when the roller coaster comes to town, right? Everybody wants a ride. And so I think it's really heating up. And with all of the sightings that are going on now, of course, we're seeing our extra-dimensional family kind of filling the grandstands as well. And again, I go back to this analogy of a birth. You know, there may be travail, there may be apparent chaos, but what's coming, the joy of what is coming, will far surpass and, you know, pretty well relegate this time of chaos to a dim memory, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've had a lot of people ask me the question, and I'd love to hear your answer on it, because, you know, there are people who definitely have chosen not to awaken, and they've chosen not to participate in this event, and not everybody's going to make it, you know, through this shift, you know, and take their physical bodies, you know, with them, or their ego program, or whatever you want to call that. Again, I'm not judging that. I'm just saying it's just a limited program. Where would these people go? What would happen in these circumstances?
Well, again, I have a couple of ideas about that, and it changes daily. But first of all, let's put that question in context. Outside of time, we all make it. Uh-huh. There are no losers in this universe. Within time, however, there's still the free will to choose experience, and there will be those in this upcoming process who will choose the old experience. And you know, I do subscribe to a sense of the separation of the Earth into an ascended version, a fifth dimensional planet, and a continuation of a third dimensional planet for those who choose that curriculum. And that in all likelihood, these two planets will coexist in the same space, and yet will be totally unaware of each other. The difference, I think, and again, this is just conjecture because nobody truly knows, will be that those in the fifth dimensional vibratory planet will have the option to go back and forth. In other words, just like the ascended masters now can show up and assist in earthly matters, those in the fifth dimension will be able to go back and affect and influence those in the third dimension. So the third dimensional experience will be much more improved than our current third dimensional experience. Mm-hmm. Much more light available, and nature itself will be able to regenerate. And I dare say that some of the lessons that we've learned as a species will contribute to an enhanced third dimensional experience. But again, we have that freedom. If we feel that we haven't mastered the lessons of duality, we'll be given the opportunity to do so. But again, we're talking about time by saying this is going to happen in the future. It's happening right now. You can walk down the street and connect with certain people. You look and the light in your eyes is reflected back to you, and you know that person. You know, you may not have ever met them in 3D and not have crossed paths in the body, but there's something about them that you recognize as part of you. And there's just that knowing. There's other people you look at, and they look right through you as if you're not even there. You're not even in their world. And so I think it's already happening.
I agree. Yeah, we have in our classes here, in the self-mastery classes and the teacher training classes, we have a couple of things happen. We actually have photographed masters appearing, like Mary and Kuan Yin and some of these other masters actually appear, and we're able to actually get photographs of them. And some of the people in the class are actually disappearing. And you can see right through them, the chair behind them and the wall behind them and the chairs, and they become less dense physical, and some disappear altogether. And so we're already seeing a blending of worlds here between, you know, the masters dropping in and people, you know, going up in frequency and becoming, outside of this denser realm, you might say.
That's amazing. I've actually seen some of those pictures on your website, and thank you for putting them out there. So the veils are thinning, between the dimensions, the veils in our mind. Again, I have to always remind myself that the outer is only a projection of the inner. Mm-hmm. So all of our experiences are reflecting back to us the shifts and the expansion of our awareness as we return back to our knowledge of ourselves as divine co-creators. And it's fascinating that it's happening now on that scale. And I think what you have there up there at the ranch is probably, a microcosm of what's occurring eventually and soon on the macrocosm. Ken Carey, who's one of my favorite authors on these topics, talked about places on the earth where people of like minds will just naturally be drawn to begin to manifest these changes, and he called them islands of the future. Mm-hmm. So I think probably what you got there at Isetti Ranch is a little island of the future where, you know, people are going to give a preview and an opportunity to step into these experiences without fear in an atmosphere of acceptance and safety. And so we're going to see more and more of these kinds of experiences, I think, and until it actually births a consistent pattern of experience where those who have chosen, to step forward and graduate into a fifth dimensional experience will be in that state all the time, and will have that freedom of movement and choice as to how to affect other dimensions. We are already multidimensional beings. It's just that our attention has been limited by our choice to come to 3D Earth School.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've always felt that and experienced a lot of the different dimensions. And I always tell people, too, between this third dimension and the fifth dimension is, the fourth dimension, which anything goes on that level. You have some pretty mixed up creatures on the low astral level, you might say. And the higher astral level, you have guides and teachers and things, but they haven't transcended their cultural or religious boundaries. They haven't, totally broken into that unified field where they see the creator in all creation yet. But, they're good teachers and guides and things like that. And, in the middle layers, you have just John Doe, everyday John Doe doing their thing. But, I always tell people it's very important that when you're going to play in these other realms to actually learn how to connect with your fifth dimensional self and fifth dimensional on-up entities for assistance and learn how to heal these negative unseen, energies and maintain your own self-authority.
Yes. And, of course, the way I understand that, which is the same understanding, is that, of course, the third dimension is dualistic. Mm-hmm. So we have a dimension of opposites coexisting. And the fourth dimension is the dimension of the mind, which is also dualistic. Mm-hmm. The structure of the physical brains being split right down the middle is a pretty strong clue that thought is dualistic. Mm-hmm. And so thought can take those higher fourth dimensional thoughts, those sacred thoughts, those thoughts that bring us to the experience of oneness or unity, or can only ever be pointers to the truth, as Eckhart Tolle called them. So the more we entertain those upper fourth dimensional thought forms, and again, we do that through through a practice, like we talked about earlier, the importance of having some kind of a practice and embracing these, what I call non-dual thoughts, it actually brings us to the threshold of the fifth dimension. So you can think of your physical body as third dimensional, being subject to opposites like hot and cold and up and down and sad and happy and sick and well and all that. And the mind as fourth dimensional, still subject to duality, thoughts of good and evil, love and hate, etc. But that the heart space is attuned to the fifth dimension. Mm-hmm. So you could say the heart space is our fifth dimensional portal. It already vibrates. And we can feel unconditional love without the need for a concept, or an explanation. Whereas if you start to think about unconditional love, you've stepped down into the fourth dimension and you're apt to come up with some kind of an argument or, an opposite point of view. So in that practice that we were talking about earlier, how important it is for people to have, I think, one way of approaching that would be to consciously drop our attention into the heart space and go beyond thinking and step into feeling and connecting with that feeling nature. And that's going to be the doorway into these direct experiences with the fifth dimensional beings, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. That's, you know, it all boils down to the heart and the heart connection, it seems like. And I've seen over and over, the mind will lead you all over the place and create all kinds of fictitious enemies and fears and phobias. And when you drop back into the heart, most of that just goes away.
Yeah.
And that's what the practice we do. It's a matter of no mind. It's a practice of no mind where you drop into the heart.
Yeah.
And people think, well, the heart, if you're in your heart, then you're weak. You know, then you're in your emotions and you don't have any control. They have all these concepts around that, but they don't realize your soul sits right there and your soul's connected to the source.
It's itself.
And the heart is the power. It's the mind, which thinks it's in control and wants to be in control all the time, has access to, a little tiny bit of the big terabyte program going on,
If we're lucky.
Yeah, yeah.
But as we were saying about the mirror world, everything is bass ackwards. So if you look at the way the world looks at things and turn it around, you've probably got half a chance of perceiving the truth. You know, Valerie Hunt, who was a pioneer in the study of the energy field and emotions, and years ago, she was actually measuring with technology changes in the auric field in response to certain emotions and things. So she was a wonderful bridge, is a wonderful bridge. She's still out there doing this. But she measured the electrical field of the heart and discovered it was 50 times as powerful as the electrical field of the brain. Mm-hmm. So biologically, we are set up or designed to be, heart-centered beings, with the mind the servant of that state of awareness.
Yeah, we do have it bass ackwards, right now. I always talked about, somebody asked me about politics, and I told him, I said, well, the way I understand politics is that take everything they say, reverse it, and then multiply it, and you'll understand where things are going to go. Until you figure that out, and you're just going to keep doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. But
yeah, it's pretty mystical how we've set all this up, isn't it?
Yeah, it's almost hilarious. But there is action reaction, and they're actually, condemning themselves to a lower frequency. The separation game.
Yeah.
But there's consequences and reactions to that, and less love and joy and bliss. But that's a path that some need to take, and I'm sure all of us have taken. I mean, I hacked off heads as a Viking warrior in a past life, and was a road bandit, and did a lot of things that I gained a lot of wisdom from.
Yes.
I guess everybody has their. Nobody knows what another soul needs for completion, and we're all on different programs down here.
Yeah, another model that helps me understand how this is, how we can all be one and yet seem to have our own, storyline within that is if you think of a sphere, and each of us is like a little point of light within that sphere, and holographically, the entire knowledge of that sphere is actually held in each little spark. And yet each little spark has also been given the freedom to position itself wherever it wants in that sphere and experience timelines, you might say, of connection with other sparks, which we call our parallel lives. But if you go step back to the model of the sphere as one being, there's really only one of us here, and we experience all lives simultaneously. So we have our own special chosen pathways within that, but as the pathways coalesce and intersect, there's like a convergence, you might say, of all pathways and a sparking of this mind back into the memory of itself as one. Mm-hmm. Peter Russell called this the awakening of the global brain way back in the 1980s. And I, for one, have been a person who has seen the numbers 1010 pop up almost daily for quite a few years now, and it really mystified me until I was reading Peter Russell's work on the global brain. And he said that in the typical neuron or brain cell, there are 10 to the 10th power molecules. And in a typical human brain, there are roughly 10 to the 10th power neurons. On the planet now, and as he was writing this in the late 80s, there's 10 to the 9th power brains or people. And so what he was, you know, kind of getting at was that when the population gets to that same threshold, there will be a harmonic resonance from the atomic to the cellular to the planetary level, which could actually herald the awakening of this one mind. Mm-hmm. Each of us, the paradox will be that each of us will still have our own chosen perspective within that, and we'll call that individuality, although we'll have, you know, a meaning outside of the ego's description of that, and yet we'll also have at the same time total awareness of our oneness with Creator and with each other as the created one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had a near-death experience, and I got that concept of being unique yet one, you know, because yeah. I was in that plane of bliss, that golden white light, and I was still aware of myself, but I was a light within a bigger consciousness and energy, and was aware of that too. So at the same time, both concepts came together as also being unique, yet one with the greater light, you might say, and like each little point of light can be the spark that can ignite into the full flame if it desires to do so.
That's beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, unfortunately, we're out of time. I wish we could go a lot further into this. Before we close, you want to give the best way people can contact you or get a hold of any more information?
Sure. Well, our website right now is still the best point of contact, which is bluesunenergetics.net. Blue Sun, of course, in reference to the Hopi prophecy of the appearance of the blue star at the time of shift. Mm-hmm. People can email us at info@bluesunenergetics.net. The book, which goes into a lot of these topics and basically is an optimistic look at this opportunity, can be picked up on Amazon or Barnes & Noble or any of the other major outlets. And again, it's called Navigating the Collapse of Time, A Peaceful Path to the End of Illusions. And I'd also like to mention that my wife, Irina, and I are also going to be publishing in the spring a compilation of our manuals on dowsing. So dowsing is an art that can help people, again, reconnect with the power of their minds, help in a very tangible way to clear a lot of the stuff up that we're holding in the unconscious mind, and to, you know, step into another level of service. So that's coming in the spring, and I think that's about it. And I just encourage everybody to keep tuning into your radio show because this is a great service you're doing.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show, and we'll have to get you back on real soon.
I look forward to that.
All right. Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
All right, this is James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio signing off. Have a great day and become the full flame. Ignite that spark and watch the skies because things are going to get interesting.